From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of February, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Bakes. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. And, of course, Drew Lerner will be here to help us take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. The home of the Spring Outlook, the Willag Farm Doc event you can't afford to miss. It's just $25, the 8th day of March. Tickets available online now at willag.org. I'm out of the office this afternoon, so no update from the commodity markets as it's related to the prices in Chicago.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Jackie Vakes of TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri, now joins us to discuss what's been happening in Chicago. It's been interesting. But first, Jackie, I want to remind folks that you will join us at the Beef House for the Spring Outlook in conjunction with the Farm Doc team. Panelist from WILL, the Farm Doc team agricultural economist. You'll be there. It's great to have you back in the state of Illinois and Indiana for this event. The cost is just $25 if people want to join us at WILLAG.org. I know that you look forward to this event each and every year.
I do. I really, really do, Todd. It's been hard not having it, you know, with the pandemic and everything else, going on. And it's just one of those situations where it's so nice to be able to see the farmers in person and to be able to hear and have them come up and ask questions. And it's just great. So I think it's wonderful that WILL does this for them. And I can tell you, with working with people everywhere in the United States, this is the only one where they hold something like this. You guys are really unique. It's just one of those things that I think is just makes WILL so special.
You know what's funny about this one is that everybody has missed it so much. But the last one was in 20. The only one we missed was last year in 21.
I know.
So we're back. We're back.
But it just seems so weird, you know, to not have it, because it's usually, you know, it's like a kickoff to the spring is what it is for me anyway. And it really gets me going. I love seeing all the farmers and talking to everybody, you know, and seeing all of my peers. You know, getting to talk to all of them, too, in person is really nice, too. So I commend you. Thanks for all the work you do.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Folks can get themselves signed up at willag.org. Just $25. Day-long event. It includes the Beef House lunch, coffee and rolls in the morning, too. And you can find all the details online. Now, in Chicago, things have been very volatile. I suppose that means our normals have some interesting changes in them, potentially, for this week, as it relates to all the support and resistance levels.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, Todd, that you say that, because there was not one change in the support and resistance levels. Now, remember, these are monthly. These are monthly. We got up close. We got up really close, but then we failed at it. So March corn, 571, 635. May, 593, 663. July, 574, 656. On beans, March, 1410, 1592. May, 1472, 1677, and July, 1467, and 1667. April gold, 1756 and 1892. Dow Jones Index, 32,811, 36,953. U.S. dollar is the only one that did change. The support went up to 95.61, and resistance is at 97.35. Bitcoin, for February, 41,856, and resistance at 47,207. Now, you know, Todd, as we wander here into the managed money, this is interesting. You know, we know that they went short on wheat last week after being long, so they've added to their shorts. They're now 38,000 compared to 27,000 short last week. Corn, 351,000 long compared to 368,000 last week. Beans, 156 versus 177,000 last week. Soy meal, 66 versus 93,500. And soy meal, they added to the longs, 79,000 compared to 71,000. So there's been a lot of shifting going on within the managed money in terms of, you know, they spread themselves, they do all of those good kinds of things, you know, and they're always moving around is what they're doing. But it looks to me like a pretty typical situation when you're in a strange market like we are right now. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get into the market discussion. Export inspections, wheat exports, 17% behind compared to 17% behind last week. We need 13.9 million bushels a week. Corn, 13% compared to 14% behind last week. We're only expecting a 12%. They're projecting 12% behind. So we keep creeping closer. We need to average 49.5 million bushels a week. And soybeans, 23% behind on the year compared to 24 last week. And we need to average 20.3 million bushels per week to reach the USDA goals.
So now that we put that base in, what does the market look like to you?
Well, I tell you, it certainly is a wild roller coaster ride. You know, starting a week ago or last week Thursday, it's just been kind of nuts. China, we know that China needs to buy at least 8 million metric tons of soybeans a month in order to reach that 97 million metric goal by the end of the year. But, you know, the thing I think that we have to be very careful of, a lot of people are very positive about that, is that China could cut their soy demand by 30 million metric tons because of that lower soy meal use in feed rations, as well as the fact that they're feeding alternatives. You know, they told the people you have to cut how much soy meal you're using. So they import about 100 million tons of beans every year, and that helps feed that great big livestock sector that they've got. But the feed makers, you know, they can increase the use of the amino acids, although that's been a very tight market, and alternative grains, substitute for soy meal. So, you know, it's just one of those things that we've got a positive here and we've got a questionable over here. Now, this I thought was really interesting. China came out and said boosting soy meal or soybean production in their country will be a major political task this year after output of the oil seed fell in 2021 as farmers planted more corn instead. They told them to plant more corn, and they did. Do you think if they tell them to plant more beans, they won't? You know, I mean, come on. You know, if you want to kind of just laugh at political spin, boy, that is political spin right there, if there ever was any. And of course, we have will they, won't they, and the Russian-Ukraine scenario. You know, markets really washed out yesterday on Tuesday, because there was a lot of rumors around that some of the troops were being pulled back, but then they couldn't confirm it. So today we came zooming back and putting more premium back into the market. And the key why people are, you know, why this is going on basically is because, you know, Russia is a big exporter of wheat, but Ukraine corn exports are really needed to meet that global demand in that part of the world. They export 33.5 million metric tons of corn, and China takes 11.8 million metric tons of that. So why you see this market going back and forth is there, people are saying, well, if there's a conflict, it could bring China back to the U.S. for corn. And so there's just a lot of things in motion at this point in time. Monday markets are closed, Todd, for President's Day. So my concern there is that we might see traders really reduce their long positions and add to shorts going into the weekend just because of the fact that Russia could invade over the weekend and nobody knows. So they're going to want to be prepared. Let's just put it that way.
Let's stick with demand. Anything new from the ethanol front? I think some numbers have been out.
Got our ethanol data today. Production up 1.51% versus last week and 10.7% ahead of last year. That's great because, you know, we had a disappointing crush report that came out for January, and there was a great deal of speculation that the ethanol report was going to be disappointing too. Stocks were up 2.76% and about 4.88% over last year, but that's not anything that's extremely concerning. You know, weather in the plains, staying dry. So, you know, when you look at wheat, you know, wheat has played the yo-yo part in this thing because of Russia. And so it's not likely to pull back, I don't think, until we see what the future weather in the plains is going to be, and or go higher unless we really start to see more export demand. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, wheat is not a primary export grain for us. And so it is very sensitive to price, sensitive to the world situations when it comes to world weather.
What do you see in Brazil and Argentina?
Very interesting stuff down there, I'll tell you. That Cordonier gave me a thing today that I thought was really interesting. When you look at CONAB, they came out and said that Brazilian beans are going to come in at 125.4 million metric tons. The USDA is currently at 134, and DAC Cordonier is at 124. On corn, they're saying 112.3. USDA is at 114, so they're closer there. DAC is saying 112. And if you look at Argentina, we've got the USDA at 45 million metric tons of beans. Now, the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange is saying 42, and DAC is saying 40. On corn, USDA is at 54. Buenos Aires saying 51, DAC is saying 50. So there's a lot of interesting numbers right there, all of them looking to be lower than where we're currently at on the USDA. And the change in Brazilian soybean estimates from February versus January, I thought was really interesting because, you know, we're looking at a situation where the northern part has sometimes had too much rain. The southern part is extremely dry, and I think this report really, really talks about it. Mato Grosso, they actually increased productions for soybeans by 0.6 of a million metric ton. Goiás, they increased it. Minas Gerais, they increased it. Sao Paulo, they increased it. And Bahia, they increased it. But you can see as we go down, Bahia is only up 0.02 of a metric ton, million metric tons. And the further south you go, which is exactly what this is doing, the worse it gets. Now we get into Paraná. That's the state that Jeff and I went through, down 5.42 million metric tons. Rio Grande do Sul, down 7.4 million metric tons. Mato Grosso do Sul, down 2.88, and Santa Catarina, down 0.51. These are very significant. I mean, that's that Paraná is the second largest growing region when it comes to beans down there. Rio Grande do Sul also carries a great deal. And so this is going to be pretty interesting. And it certainly would indicate that as we go forward, things might get even tighter. You know, when you look at the pattern, Todd, that happened when we were first looking, you know, we were first talking about total South American production at about 210 million metric tons of beans. And, you know, we're down to 174.6. That's 35.4 million below where we started. For corn, we started off at 177 million. We're down to 168 million. That's 9 million less. But, you know, the growing season isn't over down there. You know, the Safrinha corn is the big key, and that represents 75% of Brazil's total corn production. So it's being planted. It really needs a good weather through May to reach its yield potential. Argentina beans are set in pods, filling pods. Late planted corn is pollinating. But they really need good weather over these next 2 months to reach that yield potential. And when you look at the weather forecast, that's rather worrisome. You know, and so we'll just keep you up on what's happening as best we can.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. Sure look forward to having you here in March.
Yep, looking forward to it myself.
That's Jackie Vakes of TotalFarmMarketing.com. She will join us at the Spring Outlook in conjunction with the Farm Doc team. You can too. The cost is just $25. Details online at willag.org. Well, earlier today, Reuters reported that China might soon cut soybean demand by some 30 million tons. This as it promotes lower soybean meal rations in feed and using alternative proteins. Many have wondered whether this is really possible. And a couple of years back, in the fall of 2020, in fact, we spoke with Hans Stein, a swine nutritionist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. And at that time, China was already in the process of incorporating more synthetic essential amino acids into livestock feeds, particularly for hogs. And Stein addressed whether that was possible and how it was happening.
Well, I mean, the trouble would be that there'll be less usage of soybean meal long term. And I think just the changes that have happened in China here over the last couple of years should not be underestimated, because China is such a huge country and such a huge consumer of soybeans and soybean meal. And when they decide that they are going from about 20% crude protein in the diets to 16 or even 14%, that takes out a lot of soybean meal, and that's the direction they are going in now. And in fact, now I see that they are having seminars on how to reduce the usage of soybean meal in diets for pigs. So they are really focusing on that right now.
Again, that was University of Illinois animal scientist and swine nutritionist Hans Stein, recorded in the fall of 2020. That number that he put out is very, very close, in fact, to what China says it achieved last year as related to soybean meal in feed, and dropped it to an average of 15.3%. The issue here, then, may not be China, but the rest of the planet. In fact, it's already begun to move this way, using less soybean meal and substituting synthetic essential amino acids. And that causes a problem for consumption of meal over time. Last week, University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke wrote an article for the FarmDoc Daily website that discussed different leasing options and how they might provide income for farmers on highly productive soils in central Illinois. I caught up with him to ask him just a little bit about it. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, we're seeing both cash rents go up this year because of the high returns from last year and projected high returns for next year. And there has been a lot of interest in variable cash rents. However, variable cash rents may need to be adjusted because of the increase in non-land costs that have occurred this year.
Clearly, it is the input side, particularly for the variable cash rent, that causes producers not to have as much net income. What, if anything, should they do about that?
And they may stand at level at the variable cash rent levels they have this year, because it will still be profitable. However, if these non-land costs continue at the levels that they do, we're going to have to adjust those variable rent levels in the future. But if anything, you would be adjusting the rent factors, or the percent of revenue going to the landowner, down as a result of the non-land cost increases.
Do you have a suggestion as to what that adjustment should be?
Well, to have the same revenue under the cash rent as under the variable cash rent, the rent factor would have to be 28%.
And if you'd like, you can always read up on leases and what Gary Schnitke has to say about them on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, let's start with the storm that is about to make its way across the United States. Where does it start? What does it do for hard red winter wheat growing regions, and what happens in my part of the world?
Yes, that's the big clue, or the big issue, I suppose. It begins actually this afternoon and this evening across portions of the high plains. A little low pressure center will form down the Texas Panhandle. It will create some upslope winds. Those are winds that blow from east to west into Colorado's mountains. So we'll see snow develop this evening across some of the Colorado and western Kansas, southwestern Nebraska area, while rain and a few thunderstorms begin to evolve and down in the western part of Texas. In the meantime, there's going to be a little frontal boundary that extends from the low pressure system in Texas on up into northern Illinois and southern Michigan, and rain and thunderstorms will be firing up along that line as well. As we go forward through the night and tomorrow morning, we will see the low pressure center setting up camp over the eastern part of Oklahoma, and that will bring colder air down into hard ribbon wheat country. We should see snow falling at dawn tomorrow across a big part of Kansas, southeastern Colorado, the northern Texas panhandle, northwestern Oklahoma. And some of the intensity of that snow will be increasing, but mostly on the eastern fringes of wheat country. And the low pressure system will be setting off some stronger thunderstorms and heavier rain at that point across central Illinois and on into the northern Indiana. And as we go forward through the day tomorrow, that low pressure system will just work its way steadily through the Ohio River Valley. And by the time we get to mid-afternoon tomorrow, heavy snows will be occurring from the heart of central and northern Illinois, right on into southern parts of Michigan. And right below that, or just to the south of that, we'll see some freezing rain and sleet mix. And then thunderstorms that might be severe will occur during the day tomorrow across the Delta and parts of the Tennessee River Basin area, maybe reaching up to the immediate Ohio River Valley. And then that storm will eventually take off. The bottom line for the storm is that we will lay down a little bit of snow in hard red winter wheat country that'll certainly be welcome. The moisture content's not going to be all that great, but every little drop of moisture out there is better than nothing. So that'll be a good for them. Much greater amounts of precipitation, though, will occur across the lower and central parts of the Midwest and, of course, the Delta and Tennessee Basin.
Well, whether I get snow or ice, I think I'll be staying home tomorrow afternoon, it sounds to me like. So turn your attention to South America for me. What are conditions like there, and how are things changing, if at all?
Yeah, we are probably about 5 to 6 days away from an end to the driest bias period we're in right now in parts of central and southern Argentina. That doesn't mean that they won't have some other bouts of dryness later on, but this will be the end of the longer persistence of dry and heat that they've been seeing. We will start seeing some scattered showers occurring in Argentina during midweek, actually about a week from now, and that will continue right on through the end of February. Not necessarily big soakings of rain, though. I don't want you to get down on the wrong road there, but the bottom line is that there will be an opportunity for some relief, especially in the south. Two-thirds of Argentina's key crop areas. Some of the interior north may still struggle with some dryness, though. And it looks like in Brazil, we're probably looking at a good mix of weather in general. It certainly isn't going to be ideal over the next 4 or 5 days, taking us through Saturday, maybe into Sunday. Still very dry in Rio Grande do Sul, northward into southern Paraguay and western parts of Paraná. And those areas are just going to continue experiencing a steady decline in crop conditions and further yield losses. But they too will have a chance for some increase in shower activity as we get to the latter part of next week. They'll have to wait an extra day or two for that, but they should get it. And so there'll be an opportunity for a little bit of relief for them. In the meantime, the rest of Brazil, I think, gets a good mix of rain and sunshine. Not necessarily ideal for harvesting and planting, but still not too bad, I think, for the bottom line for crop development.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
You betcha. Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.